What is up, everybody? Welcome to Matt's Going Away Party. So excited to have you here. So excited for our first guest in this podcast series. This is kind of like a crazy thing for me because this person was an idol of mine for quite a while. My favorite author, my favorite writer. He and I met in around 2018. He was working on Will Smith's book at the time, and we connected through that. And yeah, his name is Mark Manson. He has written several number one New York Times bestselling books. The one that's probably the most well-known is The Subtle Art of Not Giving a Fuck. He has become a really close friend and is just the most kind, inspiring human being. I figured that it would be great for me as a first-time author to ask him about this process of what it's like to release a book, to write one, how he does it. And of course, he's had way more experience in this field. So in this conversation, he explains what it's like to have the enormous amount of success that he's had and then what happens after, which a lot of people rarely get to see or know about, which is really, really fascinating. And then we also talk about some of Mark's like most interesting thoughts that are super, super useful just for everyday life. So yeah, so excited for you to listen in on this. If you enjoy this podcast, and if you want to learn more about what's happening behind the scenes with the book, my life, what's going on, highly recommend you check out the newsletter, which we'll leave in the description, because we show a lot of cool behind the scenes stuff there. And also, I just share a lot of the lessons that I'm learning along the way. And finally, if you haven't already and you want to, you can go to the description and get and pre-order the book. It's available. There are a bunch of really exciting bonuses with it if you order it before it launches. So highly recommend you go there as well. Pre-order. And that is it for now. Enjoy the podcast. I love you so freaking much. Thanks for being here. All righty.
It's okay. Good to be back.
Good to be back.
It's been a while. I was here the month before the pandemic. Oh, I shouldn't say that on YouTube.
Really? You can say anything.
Really?
This is like a free for all podcast.
Oh, yeah, that's right. Yeah. That's right. Yeah.
A month before the pandemic.
Yeah, I was out here, I think February 2020.
Was that when we did the other podcast with you? Oh, wow. That was a month before?
Yeah.
Damn.
Yeah.
So that must have been one of our last ones then that we did.
Yeah, you guys were heading down to Brazil, I remember.
Oh, wow. Yeah. And then when we were in Brazil, that was when COVID started to spread.
Yeah.
We're like, we should not be at Carnival right now, but we're going to do our thing. Yeah. Literally last place on earth we should be. But yeah, I mean, I guess 3 years, but it's cool. We've, you know, hung out a little bit in between.
Yeah, for sure.
To chat, catch up. I mean, we were talking a little bit before the cameras, or I guess before we sat down, just about this whole scene. So I want to kind of mention it again because it really helps me when I'm anxious to talk about the anxiety
for sure,
and just be a little vulnerable, I guess, in that way, just like gets it out of my system.
Yeah.
So I guess I just to say, like, I mean, one, thank you for coming, for essentially opening me back up into this world. Pretty much when I left YouTube, you came into YouTube around the time, I guess a year and a half, 2 years ago ish. And I went into writing. So I feel like we kind of like parent trapped each other a little bit. You know, you did the thing I was leaving and I went to your world. And when I was thinking about what I wanted to talk, at least initially, about on this podcast, I think this idea of change and transition really came up for me because, you know, over these next 5 months, I'm going back into the thing I did. But after that, I'm really transitioning out.
Yeah.
And you've been very intentional about your own change because you could have kept doing the same thing.
Yep.
So I'd kind of actually love to start with, your story in terms of like going from being an author to a YouTuber and where that decision came from. Because, you know, you, like I said, could have kept going down this track. So
sure.
I think starting from there and just like, diving in would be super cool.
Sure. So for people who don't know, I mean, I started blogging in 2008. I'm a dinosaur in this world. I'm like the old man at the party. But started blogging in 2008, built a big audience in the early 2010s, and then kind of parlayed that into a very successful publishing career. So most known for my book, Subtle Art Not Giving a Fuck. And then I did a few follow-up books. I did Will Smith's memoir. And I kind of, to answer your question, I hit a point, I got pretty burnt out of all the writing. And when I took time off a couple years ago and really thought about why, I just kind of, in my genre of writing, which is personal development, personal growth, it never really changes. Like, human psychology has been the same for thousands of years. And you can only write about anxiety so many times before you start repeating yourself. You can only write about self-esteem so many times before you start repeating yourself. And there's only so many quirky or interesting stories about, you know, interpersonal relationships before you start repeating yourself. And so I just, after like 12 years of writing about those topics, I started to feel very confined by the genre that I had really established myself and the topics that I loved. And I realized that like I felt like I desperately needed a pivot somehow, either into different topics or different genre or a different format. And I spent most of 2022 kind of experimenting with that. When I first moved out here to LA, I came out with no expectations. I told my agent, I said, I don't know what I'm going to do next. I need time to figure it out. And I just kind of let myself play. And so it was everything from, I messed around with ideas for a novel. I thought about doing like more academic writing. I talked to film producers out here who were like, bro, you should write a screenplay. And I was like, no, I think I'm good. but ultimately, like, I just found that I personally was spending most of my free time on YouTube. Mm. I really resonate with kind of the scrappy grassroots nature of YouTubers and the creator economy. Like, that, it reminds me a lot of the blogging world that I come from. But at the same time, I was kind of looking at this incredible community on the platform. And, you know, most of them are younger. Most of them are in their 20s. A lot of them have never had a real job and, you know, maybe haven't had a relationship, haven't had kids, haven't had somebody they love or care about die. And so I just looked at it and I was like, you know, I feel like there's really a space in this world to kind of come in and be a little bit, not to sound condescending, but like the adult in the room, mm-hmm. right? Like, come and bring like more mature content, maybe a little bit emotionally challenging content. And I feel like it's something that the platform needs a mm-hmm. lot. And at the same time, it's a new challenge for me because I can take these ideas that I've been writing about for 12, 15 years. And now I got to go out in the world and like actually show them, right? Like, here's what somebody getting over their social anxiety looks like, right? Like, here's what they're thinking. Here's how they're emotionally responding in that moment. And that was just a very, very exciting challenge for me. It just felt very new and fresh, and I got to feel like a beginner again, which I realized that I missed a lot. Mm. So, you know, I came into this world really just with, you know, my North Star ever since I started working again, has just been, if it's not fun, I don't do it. And so I completely stopped speaking. I've like turned down a bunch of book opportunities, and it's just, do what's fun, do what's cool, do what's interesting. And right now this is just so fucking fun. Mm. I'm having a blast.
Amazing.
Yeah.
Do you think a part of it is also that there's no pressure, or is there a lot less pressure for it to work because, you know, you've already had the success and made a name for yourself?
Yeah. It's funny. That has flipped both ways for me. So I think after my career really skyrocketed in 2016, 2017, I felt an immense amount of pressure because I felt like I had to live up to this probably unrealistic standard or expectation that I was probably inventing in my head that nobody actually had for me. But, you know, I'm like just sitting in my apartment being like, well, I sold 10 million books. I should be a certain way. And it's like, that was very stressful. And I think in many ways, stifling for a while. Mm-hmm. And it probably contributed to the burnout that I ended up experiencing in 2021. But with that time off that I took about 6 full months off. I originally intended to only take like 1 or 2 months, but then it was like, after 2 months, I was like, I think I may never work again.
Were you here already?
I was here in LA.
And were you just chilling? Like, what were you?
Dude, just, yeah. Hanging out at the beach, playing video games, surfing, like... Yeah, I really hit a point where I'm like, I'm not going to work again until I want to. Mm-hmm. And that's when it flipped for me, I kind of let go of all that expectation and pressure I put on myself and realized that, like what you just said, that prior success actually bought me freedom, because I don't need a YouTube channel to work. Mm-hmm. I don't need it to make money. I don't need, you know, my website to like its revenue to increase next year. You know, I don't need any of this stuff. So what do I want to do? Mm. What feels important and impactful and fun? Mm. And so that became very, very liberating.
It's funny. The first thing that comes up when you say that is essentially the thesis of your first book, Models, mm-hmm. which is non-neediness in relationships.
Yeah.
Is how you create sustainable relationships or have a, you know, a solid dating life.
Yep.
And it sounds like the same kind of applies to purpose and work, you know, when you're not desperately trying to make something work and, you know, desperately needing to make money off of it, you can actually do something that's more aligned and fulfilling.
I think it definitely applies to creativity to a great extent. Mm-hmm. I think most people, you've probably experienced this as well, that like the more you want something you're making to be good, the worse it turns out, right? It's like you almost have to just let go and just let it be what it is. Mm-hmm. One thing I've been thinking about more recently, and it's funny you bring up Models, because it just kind of made me think of this in a new way, but I think there can be neediness, you know, the relationship you have with your audience or your fans is another relationship that there can be neediness, right? Like
from you as a creator.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Like I think I would describe, or I would look at like anybody who like handles fame or popularity very poorly, it's probably because there's a lot of neediness in their relationship with their audience, right? Like they need constant validation and approval. They need everybody to like them all the time. In the same way that like completely fucks your dating life, it will fuck your creative life. You know, making art or doing whatever you're doing online. Mm-hmm.
I mean, I'm definitely guilty of that.
Yeah. I think we all are. Like you have to, it's like dating. You learn the hard way, right? Yeah. Like you get burned a few times.
Yeah. Yeah. I feel like a lot of my career on this platform has been, you know, avoiding being canceled at all costs. It's like, cut this, cut that, you know? Yeah. I think there's just this like, I think honestly, a lot of creators that I've talked to have this deep fear of being canceled, you know, for the smallest sentence, the smallest word. And so I think that also stifles creativity when you're just so paranoid about every little thing you do and say.
I can definitely relate to that.
Because you're also kind of polarizing, you know?
For sure.
And also like, I don't know. I mean, you were really the first author to really use the word fucking, even on the title of your book. Mm-hmm. Ever since then, it's become, you know, cooler. But
yeah,
I think throughout your career, you've been a little more polarizing than most.
Yeah, it's scary, right? Like, especially in this line of work, you spend so many years building up to where you got, right? Mm-hmm. There is kind of this paranoia that it could leave at any moment. You know, again, to use the dating analogy, it's like if you're going through a relationship – constantly afraid that they're going to leave you, you're probably going to be a terrible partner. You're not going to be able to be in that relationship authentically. And again, I think that applies to a creative career as well. You know, if you're writing or recording to not lose people, then you're probably going to lose people.
For sure. Actually, I was thinking about this because it's very hard for me to think about the rest and recovery portion that comes after this book. Mm-hmm. Like my mind immediately goes to, you know, once I'm out of Yes Theory, like in terms of responsibilities, what am I going to do?
Yeah.
And I already have like one idea in particular that I've been toying with that I've kind of shared with you.
Yeah.
What I've realized in that idea is I think if I do end up, you know, whether it's like a podcast or content or whatever, newsletter, I think I don't want that to be how I make a living. Like,
interesting.
It has to be some other thing. And the content or whatever is like it feels more like a bonus. And I think what happened with, you know, me throughout this time with Yes Theory, because I was, you know, for a while, the one more in charge of finances and accountants and lawyers and the more of the paperwork stuff. Mm-hmm. I was constantly on edge about the solvency of this business and how long it was going to last. And my mind was so crowded by that stuff that I had a lot less time devoted to not only creativity, but actually just enjoying it.
Yeah.
You know? And I think that is one of the nice things about getting older and becoming, you know, a little more financially stable is, yeah, there's a lot more like room to think and space to breathe. Mm-hmm. And even when I hear you talk about like the rest, you know, the 6 months you spent off, I'm like, that sounds just
amazing. Dude.
What? You're just chilling on the beach and playing video games. And
it was so hard to do though.
Really?
It's so hard. I mean, I think I'm a bit of a workaholic and always have been.
I love how I said, yeah, you are.
Yeah.
Yeah. I know you so well.
Totally.
Yeah.
No, I really am though. I like gave myself permission to kind of take a certain amount of time, but I don't know. There's just, for me, a lot of self-judgment came up. Like, what are you doing? You worked 12 years to build this thing. Now you're just ignoring it. Your audience is going to forget about you. Like that anxiety and insecurity was like kind of the first couple months. And then, you know, you get to month 3 or 4 and you realize that those things aren't true. But then there was like a much deeper, like, you're wasting your life. You're not adding value to the world. Your life is becoming meaningless. Like all this like very ugly, dark shit started to like kind of bubble to the surface as well. It was strangely a psychological struggle to like not work. And there were a lot of times where I would run into my office and I'm like, I got to start working again. But then I was miserable. And so I would just remind myself, you know, it was just like, oh yeah, I hate my business right now. And that's why I was taking all this time off. And so I just kind of felt trapped. Like it was definitely like an emotional or existential circus going on in my head for a while.
And did it, like towards month 6, did it start to kind of ease that stuff?
It did. Yeah, so a lot of the stuff I was talking about earlier, like kind of A, seeing my prior success as a form of freedom and not a prison of expectations, that started to flip. I don't know. I think after a certain amount of time, I realized I'm like, I shouldn't do anything I don't want to do. Like I worked so hard for so long and I did a lot of things that, you know, I put in my hours, I grinded, I did a lot of things that I wasn't excited to do. Like I shouldn't do that anymore. And just giving myself permission to do that took a long time to get to. But then once I did give myself permission, it kind of opened everything up. Like it work became play again. It became like, I felt like a kid in a sandbox of like, oh, what can I make? This will be fun.
Wow.
Yeah.
And had YouTube been an idea before you started the time off?
Yeah. So, you know, the format and the concepts that we're working on right now, which will be out by the time this comes out. I actually had the idea for this stuff back in 2021. It's funny, actually. I think I had the idea for this stuff, I think Thanksgiving 2021. It clicked while watching a Mr. Beast video, of all things. And like, I watched a Mr. Beast video and I was like, you know, it'd be cool if you did like a self-help version of that. And then like my mind just kind of went down this road and I started coming up with all these concepts and I'm like, holy shit, like that could be fucking huge. And I remember telling my wife, I was like, you know, if I ever do a YouTube channel seriously, like I'll do it this way. And then I forgot about it for like a year and a half.
Really, you didn't think about it at all?
Well, it was just like, I had so much stuff going on. Like I had a book launch. You know, was just like, was under contract for another book. I was doing speaking. Like it felt like I didn't have room on my plate. So it wasn't until I cleared my plate of everything. And then I kind of sat there for a few months and was like, what do I want to make? That idea came back. And I was like, you know, I actually could make that if I wanted to. And then I started playing with it and dabbling.
Do you want to talk a little bit about it?
Sure. Sure. I mean, it's basically the principle behind it. The thing that excites me so much is that, you know, in the personal development world, kind of the standard model is like, if I'm the coach, right, it's like, okay, pay me a bunch of money and I'll tell you how to fix your problems. And I think that makes sense on the surface, but I think there's a lot of kind of problematic incentives baked into that that are not immediately obvious. But anybody who's spent a lot of time in the self-help industry is very aware of them. Mm-hmm. The first one is, if I'm getting paid to solve somebody's problems, that immediately incentivizes me to like not solve their problems. Not completely solve their problems, right?
Just a little bit.
Just a little bit. Yeah. Just give them a little bit. Like, yeah. So they keep coming back. Like, yeah. Oh, you found another. Oh, yep. Rabbit hole goes deeper. Yeah. Like, here's my invoice. I think the other issue, and I ran into both of these things. So I coached people the first 5 years of my career. And I stopped because of both of these. So that first issue. And then the second issue is, what I found is that a lot of people come to coaching with a mindset of, well, dude, I just paid you $1,000. It's like, you didn't fix it. It's not my fault. Like, I shouldn't have to do anything. Like, I paid you to do it. And it's like, well, no, that's not how it works actually, right? Like people would pay, they would hire a coach to basically alleviate themselves of the responsibility of their own issues. And that was super problematic because you like can't, it just puts you in an impossible position as a coach. So I like both of those things made me feel really icky. And when I looked out across the industry of like people who were doing like massive scale coaching with like seminars and like thousands of people, their practices, business practices and marketing practices like made me feel really icky. And I was just like, I don't want to go down that road. I'll just find a different business model. The thing that clicked, the thing that like watching a fucking Mr. Beast video clicked for me is I was like, wait a second, giving people money is scalable. Like you can do that profitably on the internet. Mm-hmm. And that was like a very profound realization because it made me ask, okay, what if you take that person who would normally come to me and say, here's $1,000 to fix my problem. What if instead I went to them and I was like, here's how to fix your problem. If you go do it, I'll give you $1,000. Now suddenly, because like 80% of personal growth problems, it's not because they don't know what to do. It's people know what to do. It's the information's everywhere. They just don't fucking do it. And so like one of the biggest levers to behavior change is to create incentives. And so if you can, create context, kind of gamify things, and then add rewards, people will get off their ass and go do the thing that they've known for years that they should be doing. They've just been too afraid to do it. You guys have proven that, you know, over the years, right? Like the whole concept of seek discomfort is like, you know, it's if you put people in the right context, they will confront fears that they never thought they could confront mm-hmm. before. It's a very powerful thing that you can leverage. And so I decided to kind of experiment leveraging that. Find people who have had these problems that they've have persisted throughout their lives, take them, coach them in an intensive anywhere from 3 days to 2 or 3 weeks, put them in these contexts, create incentives and rewards for them. And so far we've done three of them so far, and we'll be posting the first one in a few weeks. The results have been staggering.
Really?
It's like absolutely incredible. Yeah. It's crazy. Like it's shit that used to, like, early in my career, stuff that would take months to get people, like the sort of progress that would take months. It's like, it happens in like 2 days. And it's, and what's been happening too, is that people actually get kind of pissed off because they're like, oh, if I knew it was this simple, I would have done it like 10 years ago. Dude, like, they're like, where were you 10 years ago? Holy shit. I wasted so much time. So it's been really exciting.
Damn,
and really fun. Yeah.
Because up to this point, you've done mostly talking head stuff.
Yeah.
And now you're like, it's funny when you started talking to me about this idea, you were like, I think you started going, you went out the first time. I think you texted me and you were like, it's harder. Cause originally you were going to get strangers off the street and you were like,
yeah, I want to do harder to do a man on the street thing. And yeah, you guys make it look easy. It's not fucking easy, man. I remember I was out on the Venice boardwalk and I was just sitting there. I'm like, damn, dude, my respect for the Yes Theory guys just like went up a few notches because this is fucking brutal.
Yeah. Dude, yeah. It's, I think people don't, because this was what I said too, is like we cut, I mean, especially when we were doing like a lot of stranger stuff.
Yeah.
Around probably like 95% of our rejections.
Yeah.
You know, because the video has to stay pretty short.
Yeah.
So, you know, I mean, this is YouTube, right? Also, it's like this montage of like, no, but then yeah. But you don't show like 5 hours of like
hours.
Just punches to the ego.
Hours.
It's like just
hours.
Embarrassment after embarrassment.
Yeah.
When you shared that you're doing that, I just had like a, it made me excited to watch, you know, because you don't really see much of that, especially in the coaching world where everybody's coaches, it's, you know, they say they've got it all figured out.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, I know this.
Yeah.
It's like the 25-year-old life coach. It's like,
yeah. We did with one of the people that I worked with, I set up like kind of a game with her, like the challenges escalate as the videos go on. And you remember the show Who Wants to Be a Millionaire?
Of course.
Yeah. So we structured it like that. And we called it who wants to not give a fuck. And so like the first challenge is like a $50 challenge and it's like something super easy. And then it's $100 challenge and $200. And so one of her lifelines was she could make me do a challenge. And the challenge she made me do was I had to hand out a stack of flat earth flyers at a mall. Dude,
was this your idea or she came up with it?
No, it was one of the challenges we had, but it's like one of her lifelines was she had to make, she could make me do it. And so I had to go hand out a stack of flyers. It was brutal, man. Like,
wait, do you have to say what it was?
Yeah.
To people? Oh God.
Yeah. Like I was like walking up to people and I'm like, excuse me, would you like to know the truth that they're not telling you? You know, people would like look at it and be like throw it away in front of me.
Hey, aren't you the guy that wrote that book?
It was so, I ended up by the end, it was so hard to get people to take them that I had to like almost kind of trick people into it. So I would like walked up to a hostess at a restaurant and I'm like, hey, you look bored. Would you like some reading material? And she was like, yeah, sure. And so I handed it to her and like ran away.
Oh, incredible.
But yeah, it was like torture. It was like an hour of torture getting through that challenge. And I think it's really important to show that like you said, nobody has it figured out.
Mm-hmm.
Anxiety never goes away. Mm-hmm. You know, it's, you just get better at managing it. And ultimately like one of the best things you can do is just find a way to laugh at it, right? Like find a way to to make it fun or make it worthwhile, like find some sort of like higher purpose that justifies the suffering that you're going through.
Key, dude. Yeah. The laughter is key.
Yeah.
Yeah. We used to play this game called Discomfort where we would all,
it's in the book. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Everybody would sit around and one person would have to go up. And what was wild is, you know, it's kind of like improv. So, you know, like my brother, for example, Tommy came in on his first day. We made him get up and play and he could barely like utter a word.
Yeah.
You know, and after about a year, 2 years, because we did it so much, the comfort, you know, you still have that anxiety going up, but there's just this level of comfort through repetition. And I think, again, this is why especially before you coming, I was pretty nervous about all this, but I also know that the more and more I do this and more I have experiences like this, there's just a growing comfort that comes with that.
So here's a question for you. We're probably like 20, 30 minutes into this. Is it like riding a bike or does it feel different?
Honestly, it feels better.
Really?
Yeah.
That's good to hear.
Making videos was never really my thing. It was always more Thomas and Amaris.
Yeah.
And my brothers. But when we did the podcast for the first season with Headspace, I remember walking out of, I think, our first or second podcast, and Thomas and I were walking down the street over here, and we'd gone for like 3 hours with this podcast. And he was wiped.
Yeah.
And I was walking next to him, and I was so energized. It's like, I can't believe I just got paid to do that. Like, I just got made money.
That's amazing.
Talking for 3 hours to this really interesting person. Yeah. Like, none of them, I realized it was different and everybody has their own thing when it wasn't the same for them as much. And so when I thought about even like coming back into this, this is so much better for me than like the action-packed Yes Theory style videos. But who knows, you know, as it continues, like I thought writing was going to be a lot more smooth and easier than it was. And
dude, it's fucking brutal.
I think I'll have to go to therapy for an extra few years because of what happened.
A book is like, you stare into the abyss until a chapter comes out.
Dude, I was like, this can't be healthy. Like, I don't know. It's just how it is
for
everyone.
It's not sometimes,
But then I honestly, having you around helped me a ton just hearing about your experiences. Cause I always thought, you know, your writing came super smoothly to you and all this stuff. But
it's like anything. I mean, if it's done well, it looks easy. But it's funny cause it's, you know, I remember there were a few times we talked and you were kind of like telling me where you were at. And I was like, don't worry, man. Like everybody goes there, you know, you hit these points and it's never at the beginning. Cause in the beginning there's like a honeymoon phase, like chapter one, it's just pure excitement. Yeah. You're like, this is going to be amazing, you know? And then it's once you get into like chapters 2, 3, 4, for me at least, that's where it gets really ugly because once you've gotten that far, you realize that all these beautiful, perfect ideas that existed in your mind actually look like shit on paper. And then that's when like the crisis starts setting in of like, oh no, maybe I'm not a good writer. Maybe I don't have a book. Nobody's going to read this.
Yeah.
And then you just kind of wrestle with that. And then it's towards the end, it gets better again too. Like once you successfully wrestle it into something cohesive and that you feel good about, those last few chapters kind of come out smoothly again. Cause you're like, oh, I know what it is. It is a book. People are going to read it. It's going to be fine.
Yeah.
You know,
I like that you say wrestle. It feels like wrestling.
Yeah, it does.
Yeah.
And some days it beats you and some days you beat it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Definitely. God, and the days when you beat it are just
heavenly. The best. Yeah. The best.
Yeah. I mean, I was, by the way, congratulations on your new movie.
Thanks, man. Thank you.
Yeah. I was watching it with my girlfriend last night and she was saying how she had brought out a notebook and taken notes because there were so many important things she wanted to write down. It was really good, dude.
Cool,
yeah.
Man. Thank you.
It was cool to see it in that format.
Yeah.
By the way, anybody who's interested, Mark has a new movie, A Subtle Art of Not Giving a Fuck. You can find it on Amazon, Apple TV. And, you know, to put something from, because you start in the beginning of the movie with like the dying and you end it, it's like this beautiful like beginning and closing.
Yeah.
And to put something so compact like that, I think it just requires like, I don't know, at least for me, I mean, trying to do that with the book where I was like, how does the beginning connect with the end? Like, are people going to freaking, is this going to make any sense, you know, throughout? Like, is there going to be a through line here? And in the process of doing it, I like literally for the 2 years of writing the book, this is what I was telling her last night. I was like, I slept probably 4 hours a night average, like sometimes three, never more than six.
Yeah.
Because the story would continuously play out in my head. I was like, fuck, it doesn't make sense here. This makes no sense. Like, why am I talking about that? I should be talking about this.
And the worst is that when you either come up with a great idea or solve a problem at like 2 a.m. and you're like,
yeah,
I have to get up and go write it because if you don't, you forget it by the next day. And so there's so many times deep in a book. Like, it's funny. My wife has just learned what it is now. Like, when I'm writing a book, I'll just randomly get up at like 2 a.m. and leave the bedroom. And she's like, oh, you figured out how to finish a chapter. I'm like, yeah.
Just like a zombie walk to their living room.
I'll be back in a couple hours.
Yeah. I mean, I remember this last book you wrote, if you don't mind, if you're down to talk about it, just like that last bit of process that you went through.
Which one?
I mean, the most recent one where you were saying like that you drank a ton of Red Bull and...
Oh, yeah. Everything is fucked. Yeah. Everything was fucked writing that book. Yeah. That's actually... I mean, we were talking a little bit about health before we started, but that book, like, I think really kind of pushed me over the edge health-wise. I mean, I already had a fairly unhealthy lifestyle before that, but I kind of kept it in check with enough exercise and, but yeah, I was writing that book at the same time and flying around the world, following Will Smith around and trying to do those two things at the same time, like nearly killed me. I was just pounding energy drinks constantly, always like jet lagged all the time, totally stressed out all the time. And I probably gained like 20 or 30 pounds. I started having chest pains at a certain point.
Oh, yeah. You went to the doctor, no?
Yeah.
And he was like, what does he say?
I went to the doctor and he ran all the tests and he was like, oh, yeah, you're fine. And I was like, really? And he's like, yeah, you're totally fine. Have you been stressed lately? And I just wanted to start crying. I'm like, yeah, I'm writing two books at the same time. And he was like, oh, okay. What's your diet like? I'm like, well, 4 to 5 Red Bulls a day. And he was like, that might be where the chest pain's coming from.
Dude. 4 to 5. Oh my God.
I was a wreck, man.
Wow.
I was a wreck. It was brutal.
Did you feel like enormous sense of relief when it was done? Out and you were finished?
Yeah.
Please say yes, because this is what I was expecting.
Yes. Like in a vacuum, yes. I mean, the problem with that was I had to go directly from finishing that book into writing Will's. So,
okay.
Like I had 0 days off in between.
Dude.
And did the whole book tour and everything. So it's, I just like ran myself into the ground in 2018, 2019. Again, to come back to the relationship analogy, like I look back at those years, I'm proud of the work I did. I think it all turned out well, but like I didn't know how to say no.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't know how to say no to an opportunity. Like I very much had a scarcity mindset of like, okay, my career blew up. This might be my 15 minutes. Say yes to everything. And that probably would have been okay for like a year, but I did it for like 4 and it just wrecked me. Mm. And it's the same way again in a relationship. Like you have to have boundaries. You have to know how to say no. You have to know like what you're willing to do and not to do. And, or else you lose yourself.
Yeah. True that. True that. I guess I have like a one thing in particular that I think will be useful for both me and the audience. I guess, like, you know, kind of goes back to what I brought up initially, is this idea of change in identity. Mm. And one of the things I loved about the movie that you reiterated, and that I actually had to write down again, because I was like, this could really become a thing.
You know?
The Manson's law of
avoidance. Yeah.
How, like, anything that threatens your identity, is you'll resist it at all costs, even if it's positive. If I got that correctly, was that said well? And so I guess for you and this shift from writing to YouTube, and this change of identity, mm-hmm. has that come with like a grief of, you know, because you've talked before about how like change inevitably brings grief.
Yeah.
And have you grieved this old self in like shedding the skin of this old self for this new self? And I'm asking for myself because I'm going through this change right now. I'm experiencing it like real time.
Yeah.
So just hearing that experience would be super useful.
It's interesting. I'm not, but I think the reason is I actually think I trying to adopt the identity as like a writer or an author didn't fit very well. I actually think it caused more suffering than it alleviated. Mm. And I realized when I took all that time off, I'm like, you know, not necessarily just an author. Like, I've done a lot of different things. I've created stuff in a lot of different formats and mediums. Like, I'm just a creative person. It doesn't really matter if I'm doing a video or a movie or a book or a blog post or a newsletter. Like, I'm just Mark. I'm just mm-hmm. making stuff, right? And I think I talk about that in Subtle Art, that it's because of the law of avoidance, it's advantageous to define yourself as broadly and vaguely as mm-hmm. possible, right?
So to not be tied to a specific identity.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I think I look back at, I think a lot of the pressure I put on myself, maybe a lot of the expectations I put on myself, it was because it was like, okay, I have a huge hit book now. Now I need to be like Mr. Best-selling author. And I'd like tried to define myself as that. And it just made me feel bad. Mm. It made me create out of fear a lot more than I wanted to. And so, yeah, actually just kind of letting go of that self-definition has been really beneficial. It's funny. I don't really see myself as a YouTuber either. Mm. Like, I have a YouTube channel and I love the videos that I'm making, but yeah, I don't know.
It's always funny when people would call us YouTubers. Mm-hmm. It would just like, just made me feel gross. It's like,
I like that creator is becoming more of a thing mm-hmm. because it also, I think, recognizes that we're all becoming more cross-platform. Mm-hmm. You know, it's like we're doing podcasts, mm-hmm. we're doing newsletters, we're doing books, we're doing movies. Like, it's more just like it's like an entrepreneurial creative person. Mm-hmm.
Definitely. I don't know when it made that switch from influencer to creator, but I love it.
Yeah, I do too. Yeah. Influencer sucked.
Yeah. I should have introduced you as Mark Manson, the influencer. Very famous influencer.
Yeah, if you want like the facial cream I'm wearing right now, you can get it for $29.99 at the link below.
What's the name of it? What's the name of it?
Yeah, bullshit and bullshit.
Like, bullshit cream. I'll buy it. All right, I guess to wrap this up, you know, I have asked you for advice in terms of like what's to come for these next 5 months leading up to the book launch. But yeah, if you got anything, like anything you'd like me to know or that would you think would be beneficial before, as I really begin this process of, you know, talking about it, mm-hmm. posting about it, being in videos, et cetera, from your experience.
I think just keep it fun. Like, ultimately, the book is going to be most meaningful for your fans, the people who already love you. Like, obviously other people will read it, but you're probably not going to hear from those people as much. Mm-hmm. the people who are going to be super amped for this are people who have watched you for years and love you and are excited and want to hear your story. And so I would say just enjoy that. Mm. You know, don't. The best piece of advice I ever got around launching a book was from my editor. And it was actually when, before Subtle Art came out, he said, look, like 90% of book sales after the first month are just how good the book is. Mm. And it's not like you could go on every morning show, every radio show, and yeah, it'll pump up sales for a week, but whatever, it's going to go away. Right. Mm. So like the staying power is already done. Like the fate is sealed in the words that you've written. So I would just use this as an opportunity to like celebrate this chapter of your life, this incredible story that you've lived through and captured so well in these pages, and like really honor that before you move on to the next thing.
Thanks, man.
Of course, dude. Yeah.
And you're hopefully you'll be at the celebration party.
Of course.
Yeah. Of course. It'll be fun. Amazing. Thank you, dude.
Absolutely. Appreciate, man.
It. Woo, we did it.
You did it.
Yes.